even though I think I'm like emotionally intelligent and I preach to other people how they should handle their stress, I wasn't doing that myself. I wasn't practicing what I preach. And there were things that I thought that I could handle, stuff with my family, with my dad, with the business. I was just like, that's fine. I'll get to that when I need to. Right now, I need to focus on work. And I just went 100% in on work. And I was neglecting to open up about those other things that ultimately I was coping with things in ways I wasn't proud of, you know, doom scrolling on Instagram, just not being a good partner and not being present.
I'm Michael Chernow, and this is the Creatures of Habit podcast. Our habits will make us or break us. It's just that simple. I've lived on both sides of the tracks and have learned that the decisions we make on a consistent basis truly define who we are as human beings. On this show, I will be interviewing some of the most inspiring, motivating, and high-performing humans I've encountered to share their daily habits, routines, and rituals that help them stay on top of their game and ultimately happy. So sit back, relax, and pay attention, because what you hear over the next 30 to 45 minutes could potentially change your life. Let's go. What up, family? Welcome back to the Creatures of Habit podcast. I'm sitting across from a dude that I've been following on social media for probably a good 5+ years. He is a co-founder of the On It one and only fucking gym in Austin that everybody knows about. On It Gym. He's also an Adidas training athlete. He's got a massive online coaching business. He is a primal fucking smasher. He's a kettlebell master. His name is Eric Leija, also known as the Primal Swolger. If you have been on Instagram and you are in the world of fitness, movement, nutrition, you definitely know this man. I'm really excited to be sitting across the table from him because I was introduced to fitness through Muay Thai kickboxing 20 years ago. And Eric also shares this early day fitness journey in MMA and Muay Thai and jiu-jitsu and then ultimately kettlebells. And I got into kettlebells back in the day, and I really haven't messed with kettlebells in a long time. So what I'm really excited about is to hear about Eric's journey, but also to talk to him about some habits, rituals, and routines, and then talk about kettlebells and why they're fucking dope. So Eric, welcome to the show, bro.
What's up, savages?
Let's go.
Let's get it.
Dude, thanks for being here.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me. I'm glad we could squeeze this in.
It's good to be in Austin. We met very briefly at a workout at, what was the gym that we...
Squatch.
At Squatch Gym. Mm-hmm. And you and my buddy Lance are good friends.
Yeah.
And man, I knew I wanted to have the chance to sit down with you and talk to you about, just talk to you about your life and talk to you about things that you've done. I mean, you've been so consistent, man. You've been so consistent. You know, you're scratching the surface of a million followers on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Why don't you just give us a quick bio on where you started, how you got to where you're at?
I'll try to keep it concise. But yeah, I started working out, training when I was 11 years old. I was a chubby kid growing up. I remember my brother and sister would make fun of me. My older brother and sister, like, man, you got bitch tits. You're never going to have a girlfriend. And I was on my way to, going to high school or middle school. And I remember everybody was getting their first kiss, holding hands, getting their first girlfriends. And I was just like, man, all I do is play video games and eat hot Cheetos and Taco Bell. And I was pretty fat for, 11 years old. And I was like, you know what? Football's coming up. I get to play football in middle school. I'm going to get in shape, start running, get ready for this. And so I picked up the Arnold Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding, learned how to work out through that, ran around the block a couple times, lost a bunch of weight, got in shape. And I remember going into middle school those days, walking into class, he'd be like, what's up, roids? So I got in shape pretty quick, for preteen. And ever since then, I was just like, man, like I fucking love working out. I ended up getting a gym membership, even though I wasn't supposed to be able to go to the gym until like 13. So I was learning how to bodybuild. I did football for a couple years. That was fun. But ultimately, I realized I still wasn't popular, still couldn't get a girlfriend. I was like, you know what? I really love UFC. my brother, we would get like VHS tapes and go hang out with the neighbor who was Brazilian, this older
VHS baby, yeah. Let's go. Yeah.
He would order the Pride FCs at like random times in the night, you know, because they're in Japan. We'd go to his house and watch fucking the Pride FC fights with this random Portuguese guy that we knew, mm-hmm. or Brazilian guy.
Pride was dope.
It was awesome. Wanderlei Silva was one of my favorite fighters. And so, yeah, I fell in love with how awesome these guys were. I was like, these are like the cream of the crop, most like tough and athletic guys I've ever seen. Like, they're doing the hardest thing I've ever seen before. And my brother became friends with a couple UFC fighters. And so I got to start training and dabbling throughout my high school years. And I realized, getting into jiu-jitsu and getting beat up by everybody and the janitor, I was getting mopped, dude, by everyone. And I was just like, man, I was in shape, you know, by the looks of it, from all the bodybuilding workouts. I thought, you know, I look like I'm in shape. I'm going to fuck some people up. Hell no, dude. I got beat up by everybody. And so it was a humbling experience. So that really checked my ego and made me realize, like, man, what these guys are doing, this is what gets you in the best shape. And so I started training with this guy, Roger Huerta. He was a UFC fighter at the time, a good friend of my brother's. And he actually invited me to come train with him in Minnesota, straight out of high school. I got to spend a couple months in Minnesota wrestling with a bunch of crazy guys and doing MMA training with the likes of like Sean Sherk and a bunch of like some guys at the time that were kind of popular in the UFC. And I got to see the way that they were using their training with their strength and conditioning. They weren't doing bodybuilding workouts. They were using kettlebells and plyometrics. And obviously spending time on the mats and doing rounds. And so that's when I started getting into kettlebell training. You know, through all of that, I still felt like, you know, I couldn't get a girlfriend, you know, and it wasn't until after high school, college, I finally had my first girlfriend. And I realized, like, man, there was a lot of stuff that I hadn't healed through my childhood that still comes up to this day. And I'm still working on, you know, and thankfully I was able to take my kettlebell training and, you know, I became one of the first coaches at the Onnit gym. You know, I tried MMA, like around my college years, 2021. And I realized I had my first ever like MMA fight. I had done some jiu-jitsu tournaments and I did my first ever MMA fight. And dude, it went all three rounds, slugfest. We ended up winning Texas Amateur Fight of the Year because we were like trying to kill each other. And he almost knocked me out at multiple points in the fight. I almost knocked him out. I almost got him in a submission. I got a bunch of takedowns and we went back and forth. But at the end of that fight, I was just like, this is fucking crazy, man. Like, I couldn't think straight for 6 months after. My jaw was clicking and I realized, like, man, I don't know if I want to keep doing this. Like, I like having my brain cells. And thankfully, around that same time, I had been working in the Onnit warehouse for a couple years, you know, in the back of the warehouse, taping up boxes, shipping off the mail to the customers. And Aubrey and my brother, or Aubrey, former CEO of Onnit, approached my older brother who was coaching clients out of the small company gym that we had. Aubrey saw the vibe that my brother was bringing, all the people that were coming in. It was just such good energy. Aubrey decided to open a gym. He's like, man, we sell all these tools. We sell the kettlebells, the clubs, the maces, the battle ropes. We should open up a gym to teach people how to use them and keep the vibe going, you know, and build a community. And sure enough, they asked me to be one of the first coaches to like get certified, get your kettlebell certification and start coaching clients. And so I jumped at the opportunity. I said, I don't want to fight anymore. I don't want to keep trying to do that. And I'm going to start training some clients. And so before we opened the gym, I had about 6 months to start practicing and coaching people because I knew how to coach myself. But what works for you doesn't work for everybody, mm-hmm. right? And so I got to train some family members, cousins, some of the employees there. And I got my coaching reps in and we launched almost 10 years ago in December this year. And so I was privileged to become one of the first coaches. And I remember, man, for at least the first 2 years that the gym was open, we had these really badass head coaches, heads of the fitness department. This guy, Coach John Wolf and Shane Hines, they came from some really like had been training in unconventional methods for a long time and had owned their own gyms.
Is Shane the what did Shane, didn't he have his own business?
I believe so.
I forgot. I've met Shane before.
Yeah, he's awesome. Super, he's like super centered, nicest guy you ever meet. And John Wolf as well, super knowledgeable. And so they came in to take over the On It Fitness side. And when the gym opened, they were like, all right, we got to get all you coaches trained up. So we're going to bring in the top certifications, top coaches in the industry to teach certs at the gym. Almost felt like every weekend we were, us coaches got to sit in and take these workshops and certifications from some of the top people in the industry. So I got to learn a lot really fast. And at some points we didn't, you know, we took it for granted. You know, I was in my 20s and I liked to party. We would show up to these certs like hungover, hadn't slept, but just absorbed as much as we could. But I'm thankful for those years where, you know, we sacrificed weekends to go in and learn, because I learned so much so quick. And, you know, till this day, I was able to launch my own like kettlebell or workshops. I was able to teach the On It certifications after I got my reps in. I was coaching a bunch of people, and my online presence kind of blew up after I started doing some kettlebell flows and really creative moves with kettlebells that a lot of people hadn't done before. And so I got a lot of traction online. And so On It approached me and like, you should teach our kettlebell certification. And so I was able to, you know, be an assistant coach and eventually branched off and did my own thing and was able to travel. Before COVID, I was all over the place, going to major cities, teaching retreats in Costa Rica. So nowadays, it's much of the same, but actually trying to kind of restructure, rethink about how I want to move forward, just because I'm at a point now where I feel like I'm not challenged as much as I used to be. You know, I love helping people, and that's always going to be a challenge, trying to get people to come in the door and make them feel welcome. But that's something that's still that I'm pretty much got that dialed in. So it's just like, what's next? And so that's what I've been working on these past several months. I actually went and did ayahuasca for the first time back in August, and that kind of was a huge shift. Had a huge wake-up call to, okay, how can I show up better in the world? Because I had my own struggles, man. Like in the
I want to unpack that a little bit. You know, you breezed past it in the beginning of the bio, you know, stuff that you'd been dealing with or you hadn't really been dealing with from your childhood.
Yeah.
What comes up there?
A lot of family stuff. You know, my father was an alcoholic. Or still is. And my mother was always trying to get him to behave and while trying to take care of us. And I mean, don't get me wrong, he provided everything we could ever need to have to survive, you know, and we're grateful for everything he was able to give us. But when he wasn't working, he would be out partying with his friends. So I didn't really have a strong male role model to look up to, except for my older brother. He's not perfect either. You know, he's young too, and he's learning as we're growing too. So for me, a lot of that stuff I was kind of repressing. And so I was sober all the way up until like 19 years old, seeing the example of my dad. I was like, I don't want to be like my dad. I don't want to be fighting all the time, drunk, belligerent, crying, you know, like because he's sorry, you know, coming home and trying to apologize, but continuing to repeat the same stuff over and over again. So I was like, I don't want to be like that. I'm going to focus on school, focus. I used to love art. You know, I used to do a lot of art and martial arts. I was completely focused. I was dialed in with my nutrition since I was 12 years old. And I remember, which I'm grateful for, my dad would give me my own separate allowance growing up to go to the grocery store with my mom so I could buy my own healthy foods. Yeah, because you try to get organic foods and high protein, whatever, you know. So he supported us in that way monetarily, but I felt like in our family, specifically from my parents, we didn't have a lot of affection, love growing up. I mean, they showed us love in the way that they worked really hard to support us, but I never played catch with my dad, you know, and we never really said, I love you to each other. And so when I got out of high school, and I got a girlfriend for the first time, and she showed me love. I love women. I love love. And I was in one toxic relationship to the next, because I just wasn't where I needed to be in a relationship. I was, I would say codependent and mm-hmm. I had like abandonment issues maybe to where I needed that person to give me love because I didn't know how to receive it in any other way or I didn't know how to give it to myself.
My father wasn't an alcoholic. He was a rageaholic and he was, I'd never really seen him drink, but mm-hmm. we had a, you know, incredibly violent relationship, the mm-hmm. two of us. I had zero blueprint. You know, yeah. zero. When you're talking, I just like, it's just so interesting to know what happens to, and I, you know, I can only speak from a male's point of view. I don't know what mm-hmm. it's like speaking from a female's point of view, but for a male that doesn't have that, not only love from a father figure, but that, that role model to sort of paint a picture what it should look like, mm-hmm. there's a real loss and journey, right? Like you're just, you don't, like, being able to receive love is like a really hard thing.
Yeah.
When you want love from someone who just has never been able to give it to you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so I just want to, when you're talking, I'm, you know, I recently did this, I recently did, so you just did ayahuasca. I recently did, have been going through this pretty intense breath work, holotropic breath work season in my life.
Yeah.
And I did a, and it's been very deep. It's been really, really powerful for me. Like, the most sort of, it's just the therapy that I've been getting from this breath work is insane.
Yeah.
And I've done a lot of breath work. I've done Wim Hof. I don't, none of that stuff even touches what this holotropic sort of long, 30 minute long breath work sessions.
Yeah. Who are you working with for that?
A guy named Mike Gazzo.
Okay.
In LA. But two sessions ago, or no, three sessions ago, we meet every other week. I went into, my father died like 21 years ago.
Oh.
And so I was never able to really have, you know, and I was a complete alcoholic when he died. So we never really got to connect.
Mm-hmm.
But the Mike had asked me to set an intention for the breath work. And I didn't, I was just like, hey man, like this stuff is really helping me. I just want to continue to dig deeper and learn more and, you know, peel back the onion more.
Yeah.
And so once we got into the breath work, I was 5 minutes in, I kind of like dropped in. Have you ever done holotropic breathwork?
I haven't done holotropic breathwork, no.
I highly recommend it. Yeah. It's unbelievable. But, you know, the first thing that happens is you kind of start feeling this physical response to the breath.
Yeah.
And your hands and your arms start to sort of like almost seize up. And your hands kind of close up. You kind of like, you start to feel your mouth is kind of in this position.
Yeah.
Like puckered.
Yeah.
Because you're breathing, it's all mouth breathing.
Mm.
And so you feel like sort of like a little bit of like a, like your lips are kind of stuck and then your kind of head starts to feel a little numb. If you can get past that, a lot of people will stop there because it's scary.
It's uncomfortable. You know?
Yeah. But if you can get past that and understand and know that like that's part of the process, not for everybody, but for some, mm-hmm. what happens is just unbelievable.
What happened for you?
Well, in this specific session, I got really sad. And I didn't think that this was going to happen, or I wasn't thinking about my father before the breath, but I had this like overwhelming outpouring of sadness that I really wanted my father to love me, and I never felt like he did, mm-hmm. and he never said he did really,
mm-hmm.
or that I remember. He never played, you know, we never played catch, or we played catch one time that I remember.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I played sports young. He never came to a sports game. Like, never put me down. Like, never took me to, never, you know, like, just none of that.
It just
was not involved.
Yeah.
And I just got, like, insane sadness because I was like, man, I'm never going to get that. And I've been seeking that my whole mm-hmm. life in other things, in other men that I've pulled into my life.
Yeah.
That I now know have been patterns trying to replicate my father. One of them took advantage of me sexually when I was young, like all sorts of weird shit had happened.
Yeah.
And so I'm in this breath work and I'm going deep and I'm really sad. And then like I'm hysterically crying. I mean, every time I do the breath, I get insanely emotional.
Yeah.
And incredibly vulnerable. And so about 5 minutes left in the 25 or 30 minutes we were doing it, all of a sudden, I kind of like cleared up a little bit, mm-hmm. and I had this vision of me sort of like looking at myself lying down on the floor, not where I was, somewhere else kind of, mm-hmm. but like there was a door in the corner. I'm kind of looking at me from this angle, and the door opens, And my father walks into the door, and he's young. He's like probably like my age now. He's probably like, he's probably like 40.
Yeah.
Something like that. He had facial hair. He looked healthy. And he walks over to me. And then as he's walking over to me, like I kind of like go back into my body. Mm-hmm. And then he kneels down next to me. He runs his hand through my hair, and he kneels down next to my ear, and he says, "I love you."
Wow. It's like goosebumps, man.
Dude. It was like, you know, it was a vision that I had for sure.
Yeah.
But.
You saw what you needed to see.
Dude, it felt so real.
Yeah.
It felt so real. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I smiled and I was just like, oh my gosh, you know. And when I came out of it, I sat with Mike and I was like, man, that was really intense what just happened, dude. You know, and I walked him through it and I was like, I don't know if it was like just, you know, my ego or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And he was like, man, that was your father, man.
Yeah.
Your father came to tell you he loved you, dude.
Absolutely.
That's what you got to know.
And yeah. Even if it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like it. And as long as you can leave with that feeling of, you know, like almost like forgiveness.
Well, it you know, it's so interesting because I know Aubrey obviously has done a lot of work.
Yeah. Right?
A lot of work. Mm-hmm. And specifically in the plant medicine arena, I'm sure you're exposed to that while being in that mm-hmm. circle of people.
Interrupting this episode to share with you how we keep this podcast going, and that is by you supporting us through trying out or subscribing to Meal One on creaturesofhabit.com. I am giving a 20% discount on your first order. Or your first subscription order, which is a serious discount. Meal One is a superfood meal. It is a blend of gluten and glyphosate-free oats. It is packed with 30 grams of plant-based protein, omega-3 fatty acids, a probiotic, digestive enzymes, vitamin D3. It also has chia seeds, flax seeds, pumpkin seeds, and a little bit of pink Himalayan salt. There are 37 grams of healthy carbohydrates and anywhere from 7 to 10 grams of fat, depending on the flavor. You will be full for hours, people. I promise you, we developed Meal One to help you perform at your absolute best, to get that incredibly healthy and convenient edge on the competition. There is not a better, more convenient meal to start your day with or use as a pre- or post-workout meal. The macros are perfect and sourced with the cleanest ingredients in the game. Take your performance to the next level. Make your life much easier by saving time. Be able to eat healthy without sacrificing flavor, and all while staying full for hours, making your urge to snack far, far less. Hop over to creaturesofhabit.com. That is creaturesofhabit.com. And use promo code KOHPOD, the number 20, for your first order of Meal One today. Back to the pod.
What was your ayahuasca experience like?
Oh, man. I was there with my girlfriend at the time, now fiance.
Congrats.
Thanks, man. And I had done DMT a lot, mm-hmm. Probably 10 years ago. Had a lot of experience doing that. But it led me down a rabbit hole because I was doing it a lot. And I got to a point where I wasn't like really seeing any more visions. I felt like I was being blocked, or maybe had too high of a tolerance. I just didn't feel, I had seen a lot of things, a lot of beautiful, powerful messages on how I could be a better human, I was grateful for being here. But I felt like I wasn't integrating those things, and I just kept chasing being in this altered state. And so I was repeating it, and ultimately I stopped seeing things, or felt like I was being not let in to my own mind or this other dimension. And so I was like kind of scared to keep on doing it. So I stopped doing that, but I ended up drinking, doing drugs, going out, partying. I never integrated the lessons that I learned through that powerful medicine. And actually, DMT was one of the first things I ever did when I went from sober to not sober.
How does that end up being one of the first things you did?
I was listening to Joe Rogan straight out of high school, and he's always talking about smoking weed and DMT, and I smoked weed one or two times, and I was like, whoa, this is what it's like to feel high and in an altered state. Like, I think so much differently. I have a different perspective. Like, I feel so much more confident because I'm perceiving things in a different way that helps me reframe situations and just gives me a whole new way to look at life. And I was like, what else is there? And then sure enough, the guy that I was getting my weed from at the time was like, hey, I have some DMT. Keep in mind, I'm like, maybe I've gotten high on weed 3 times, never gotten drunk before. And I tried DMT and I fell in love with it. and all the things that I was seeing. So I did it multiple times for a couple of years before I stopped doing it. But it led to me, you know, I started doing fitness and was very dialed in with my fitness and nutrition. But had its ups and downs, you know, through relationships and stuff. I would fall into drugs and alcohol and partying. And, you know, honestly, a couple of years ago was about as hard as it's ever been. A relationship that ended, she left me, coupled with the anxiety of social media. You know, I had pre-COVID, I was in the trenches, coaching multiple clients a day, multiple classes, traveling, teaching workshops. So I felt like an expert because I was doing the damn thing. And then COVID hit, everything got shut down. Wasn't able to teach in person here for only like 6 weeks, right? We're shut down for a little bit, but travel was canceled. I had to cancel some retreats and workshops. But ultimately, I decided to go all online during COVID. I was like, we're going to capitalize. People were stuck at home. Let's put out an app. My app came out the month after COVID launched. And so like that app was very successful. And I was kind of like resting on my laurels, like, oh, I'm good, you know, like I can just focus on myself. And for me, that was jumping into another relationship and not being in the gym as much, not coaching classes anymore, not doing workshops, just doing the online stuff. And so when the online stuff was doing well, you know, like I was successful, but I wasn't happy. It wasn't
as so were you successful?
No. Cause it led to, it's been rough, man. These last few years, just trying to get back to it because, you know, the money was good, but I wasn't having those touch points with real people. You know, it's hard to like touch people and reach people as well as you do in person, doing it online. Mm. And so even though I was a lot of people were doing my programs, this and that, I didn't feel like I was actually helping people. I would get people reaching out to me through email, sending me private messages like, hey man, I love your programs. I'm 50 years old. I was dealing with knee injuries. Now I'm back at it, kicking ass. Or your program helped me get through chemo. I'm healthy now. And I was able to keep training while I was going through therapy and all kinds of really inspiring messages. But I wouldn't reply because I felt like an imposter and I didn't know how to reply to that person. I didn't feel confident to speak to, I wouldn't even say thank you. You know, I was just like scared. I had like horrible imposter syndrome because I wasn't in the gym. I wasn't teaching real people. And I felt like I wasn't really helping those people, even though I was. But it just was so overwhelming not actually getting, I guess, validation from real people in person that I felt like I wasn't really good at it. And after that relationship fell apart, I just kind of used that as an excuse to go into a hole and just try. I went to Europe for a couple months with my brother. We traveled, had a great time. But I ended up, you know, just partying too much when I got home, kept the party going. And ultimately, I met another woman who invited me to come to a recovery program. I started doing that, went sober. And started going back to church, praying every morning, praying at night, and being accountable to my mentor, calling him anytime some nasty shit came up, and was able to maintain being sober since then. And now I'm teaching again in person, taking on some clients, still doing the online stuff, but ultimately, you know, I was able to get through those addictions. And ultimately, it was just because I felt I wasn't, you know, really being part of the community. And now that I'm back in the community, back in the gym, talking to people, like that's what it's all about. You know, being behind a computer screen, it's not the same for me.
I've been in recovery for almost 20 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, congratulations, man. That's awesome.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, I've been in recovery. This summer will be 20 years. And man, like I identify. You know, yeah. I identify, like, you know, I don't blame anything necessarily on the decisions that I made because I feel like that's just a cop out, right? Like yeah. Things happen to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Kids go, a lot of kids go through a lot worse things than I went through. Mm-hmm. I make the decisions that I make, you know, and for a decade, I made a lot of bad ones, you know? And then when I was 23, I just decided that, you know, I'm going to die this way.
Yep.
Or live a slow, miserable death, you know?
Yeah.
Slowly just withering away. And I'm so happy to hear that you found that path, dude. I didn't know that.
Well, I'm not sober anymore. Uh-huh. You know, I was sober for 9 months and then I realized like I was doing it, you know, and I was going to like 3 meetings a week, going to church every Sunday and really dedicating a lot of my time to the program. But then I realized like it was really, I was kind of distracting myself from the work that I still wasn't doing, which was being in the community, coaching clients, coaching people, doing what I love. And so I ended up stopped going to the recovery program, and I was in a better space too. You know, I felt like when I really went down the hole, I was unhappy, depressed, sad. And with all the new tools that I learned, you know, being able to ask for help, being able to surround myself with people that actually provide constructive criticism, I realized like, okay, maybe I don't need to be completely sober and I can just maybe have a drink with my family to celebrate things. And I tested it out and I was able to just have a fun night with my family. Didn't go off the rails and party all weekend or all week. And I've drank twice in the last year, you know?
I mean, dude, that's amazing. Cause you know, and everybody has a journey, right? Everybody has their own path. Everybody has their own journey. And I think there are some people that think that they need something like a recovery program and then they go and they try it out. And some people are just like, this is just simply not for me.
Yeah.
Some people give it some time and they get some time under their belt and then they decide, hey, like, okay, I understand what that is now.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if I, you know, let me see what if I am or I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, whenever I got a friend who I meet that's like, all right, I'm gonna go and try. I'm like, all right, dude, let's go. I'm here for you if it doesn't go right.
Yeah.
And when I get a call and you know, they're like, oh man, I'm good. I'm like, man, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. You know, like, it's wonderful.
Yeah, and it also sometimes goes the opposite. You know, sometimes it doesn't work out. Yeah, it happens a lot.
And people come right back. You know? But I want to talk about morning routine because you know you're a savage and you've been very consistent with like just sticking with this style of training, but also just in regard just consistent in general in regards to fitness and your nutrition. And so I would imagine, is there something that you do in the morning to sort of kickstart your day? Is there like a do you have any sort of morning routine that gets you going in the morning?
Yeah, man. For me, my morning routine is I eat my breakfast. I make sure I don't fast. I make sure I get some food in my system because I'm moving all day and I want to maintain muscle mass to be strong, look good, be fit. And so I'll eat some bison and eggs first thing in the morning with some fruit on the side.
I got to get you some of that meal one, dude.
Yeah.
I got to get you some of that meal one.
I used to do a million things. I used to wake up, make my bed, pray, journal, sauna, cold plunge, red light, workout, breakfast. And I realized, man, it's like 11 a.m. You know, like I want to get work done and not just work on myself all morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to be able to do work that helps other people too. And so I've dialed it down to, you know, now, because then sometimes I would fall off and not do all the things and I would feel guilty. Like, man, I suck. Like I didn't get everything done today. So now I like to just pick a couple of things. You know, I'll have a schedule. I'll be like, okay, maybe on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I might skip breakfast and go do some light cardio and then do sauna cold plunge twice, maybe 3 times a week. I'll do that. On the other 3 days, I like to do strength training. So I'll eat first thing in the morning, get a meal in my system, get to work, and then training in the afternoon, and then do some more clients or some online work the rest of the day. But the morning routine is ever evolving depending on what my priorities are at the time. But yeah, one thing that I have added that I was very religious about when I was sober was praying every morning. And now that I'm doing that, I went through some stuff recently that I'm not proud of, that, you know, I fell off my values and principles and I wasn't living up to who I wanted to be. And just overwhelmed, stress and overwhelmed, going through like a big business transition. I've been trying to do everything on my own and not being honest with my partner about the stress that I'm going under and just kind of bottling everything up. Even though I think I'm like emotionally intelligent and I preach to other people how they should handle their stress, I wasn't doing that myself. I wasn't practicing what I preach. And there were things that I thought that I could handle, stuff with my family, with my dad, with the business. I was just like, that's fine. I'll get to that when I need to. Right now, I need to focus on work. And I just went 100% in on work. And I was neglecting to open up about those other things that ultimately I was coping with things in ways I wasn't proud of, you know, doom scrolling on Instagram, just not being a good partner and not being present. And so now I'm like, I gotta dial this in. And what helps me the most is in my morning routine is praying in the mornings. And so that helps me just humble myself. You know, if you don't believe in God or higher power, my mentors tell me in recovery all the time, it's like, you know, he asked me, do you believe in a higher power? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, well, if you don't, you know, if some guy says no, I tell him to look around in the room. Are these people combined in the support group, are they a higher power than yourself? And I'm like, yeah, you know? So just looking at the people that you surround yourself with, you surround yourself with good people, they're a higher power than you. And so being able to know that you're not alone and being able to pray in the morning, get down on your knees and pray to something, just getting down on your knees humbles you first thing in the morning to know, like, I'm not the shit. I'm not the only one that needs to be in control of everything. I can let go a little bit, control what I can, and go on the rest of the day and give myself grace. And so I've only been doing that for the past week, and I've been walking around with a lot less weight on my shoulders.
I've been doing that for the last 19 years and 7 months and a few days.
Yeah.
And I'm here to tell you, it's the one thing that I have never, I've got a lot of habits, you know, and I've done a lot of things in the morning and in the evening. Some come, some go. The one thing that I never miss, no matter what, no matter where I'm at, no matter how tired I am, whatever. Every morning, prayers and push-ups.
Prayers and push-ups.
Prayers and push-ups. It's just, and now in the last couple, like year and a half, I call it prayers, push-ups, and poses. So I do my prayers, I do my push-ups, and then I do down dog, up dog, and cat cow.
Nice.
And so I do those three things, and That's really just sort of my non-negotiable, period, mm-hmm. done. Like there's a lot of shit that I do, kind of like you. Like a lot of shit that I've done, a lot of things that I do. Sometimes I get to all of them, sometimes I don't. And I'm a lot less like, if I don't get to it, I'm like, whatever, you know? But yeah. when I'm home in my ideal scenario and I'm not traveling or, you know, I will go through 14 different things in the morning, you know?
Yeah.
But the prayers, massive, dude.
Absolutely.
Massive.
And yeah, and honestly, right now I'm just kind of redialing in what my morning routine looks like as I'm getting used to this new normal of the business shifting.
Prayers, push-ups, poses, dude.
Yeah, there you go. So... But yeah, I do. I still do cold plunge sauna on every other day. I was talking about this to a mentor of mine the other day, and he's talking about this program that we're starting next month. It's called Resilience 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was on the interview for the group, and he was asking me what things I do for resilience, and I was like, well, I work out hard. I'll do cold plunges. You know, I'll do hard stuff all the time. I stay on my diet or whatever, you know, diet I'm following. He's like, yeah, man, those are all great things. And then, but he told me from his experience, he's like, but a lot of those things, for example, like cold plunging, if I do that 3 days in a row, it's not as hard after 3 days. It gets easier over time. So it's like, what are the things are you doing to continue to challenge yourself that are going to keep building resilience? And so he suggests what he does works for him is he'll cold plunge every other day or every 3 days. That way you still get that mental stimulus from it. I'm sure if you do it every day, you still get the physical benefits.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're chasing those mental gains, I think it's important, or from my experience too, is spreading it out and continuing to challenge yourself with new things is what keeps you motivated and happy. Because I was telling him, man, like for the last few months, even though like I've got a amazing fiance, I got an awesome job, I get to work with a bunch of awesome people at the gym, I still feel like I'm not happy. Like there's something missing. I feel like I'm just kind of like going through the motions. And he's like, show me a man who's unhappy and I'll show you a man who's not challenged. And I was like, you're so right. I haven't been really pushing myself. And so that's why this year I'm going to start taking on some new challenges. Going to try to go on my first bow hunt. Going to try the tactical games, maybe even go do some races. I'm doing a 50-mile ruck in May. You know, just trying to dip my toes in new things and push myself a little bit, whether physical, mental. I'm going to pick up the guitar, start drawing again, try to find something creative, man, just to keep challenging myself because I want to keep being resilient. And, you know, for example, he works with veterans. He's a 20-year veteran himself in the Army. And he's like, war, you go to war for 20 years. Like after 10 years, it just becomes pretty normal.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't build as much resilience as it did when you started. And I'm like, that's so crazy, you know? So I'm like,
I love the idea of taking some checks and balances, seeing, you know, if doing the hard things, which I believe in, leaning into that sort of uncomfort, that discomfort, like leaning into it. But if the hard things haven't changed in a long time,
mm-hmm.
are they still getting you the same? You know, and there's also a whole class of people that kind of roll their eyes at people that do hard things.
Yeah.
You know, oh God, one of you guys, right?
Yeah.
And in my mind, I'm just like, you know, we were born on the planet. We were created to face adversity. It's just the way it was, right? And we've gotten so much closer to comfort
mm-hmm.
as we've evolved that we're becoming less human,
mm-hmm.
like all around, hormonally, mentally, like all of it is becoming less. I believe that we're getting pulled further and further from our
absolutely
from our core, from our from the motivation of us being here.
Yeah.
You know, man.
Yeah. And that's something that I've felt since I was 12 years old too, or I'm starting to see why I behave the way that I did when I was 12 years old and why I chose that path. Thankfully, I created a lot of discipline to be able to use that to try new things and be pretty successful at them. But it's also knowing that like, man, my generation, fathers weren't around as much either. You know, and so for me, and like a lot of other young men in my generation, sought to meet to the media for these role models, Schwarzenegger, fucking Sylvester Stallone, Van Damme, all these action heroes who were shredded to the gills, getting all the beautiful women, running around, creating havoc, you know, and those are our role models, you know, Dragon Ball Z.
Mm-hmm.
And so without really digging into the emotional side of things. And I felt like I'm not trying to make excuses, but that's been for me what has kind of driven me through all the problems that I've been through. You know, pornography as well, you know, seeking instant pleasure, self-pleasure through watching pornography growing up, to, you know, doom scrolling on Instagram for instant gratification, or kids who like to play video games all the time. Like as men, we have these role models. We think we need to be super jacked. So we either go one direction where we're trying to be super jacked, take a bunch of steroids so we could look like the dudes on Instagram, or we're stuck at home playing war video games because it gives us that instant gratification of conquering something and winning, you know, with those all those points leveling up super fast. And they're afraid to talk to women, you know, and so they're on OnlyFans or watching porn and they get all this instant gratification. They build up all this toxic masculinity and they just become toxic people. And I feel like that's why we're seeing a lot of guys kind of explode all over the place doing crazy shit, because we're so far disconnected from what it really takes to be a man. And I was talking to this, I talked about this with my partner, my fiance. She's an emotional intelligence, intimacy therapist. So she's kind of really deep into this stuff. She was saying that, you know, women, they get a rite of passage with their menstrual cycle. From an early age, they have that coming of age into womanhood. Hardly any men have that coming of age into manhood. You know, they don't, hardly anybody gets to go hunting anymore, you know, go on a quest and do something manly like they did in like ancient times. Nowadays, you know, the most manly thing that you could think of that brings you into manhood is having sex for the first time.
Mm.
And that is so.
Dude, I'm so happy you said that, because it just cements something for me, you know, because we live in such a weird time, right? I've got two sons. I've got mm-hmm. a 9-year-old son who just turned 9. I got a 6-year-old son. And I hunt. And I've been like on the fence on whether or not I want to introduce that part of that. I mean, I'm deeply passionate about it.
Yeah.
I love it. And this year, when I shot my buck, I said, you know, they're young, but I think this would be a good time to mm-hmm. introduce them
yeah.
to this way of life that yeah. like human beings have been doing since the you know beginning of time, actually. And so I went, after I shot the buck and saw that he was down, because I hunt on my property,
yeah.
I went back to the house and I grabbed both of the boys and I took them out to the, I took them out with me and we sat down around the buck.
Wow.
We said a prayer around the buck. I dressed the deer in front of them.
Yeah.
They all held his heart, you
wow.
know? And it was just this moment where I was like, there's something about this, you know, that's ceremonial.
Mm-hmm.
But also just like, I would never, I mean, I grew up in New York City, you know, like what
yeah.
you said, I never really thought of that. Like, yeah. I'm so happy you said that. Because there was never, the rite of passage for me was doing drugs at like
yeah.
you know, 12, hanging out with the older kids and doing drugs
yeah.
and like hooking up with a girl, you know?
Yeah. All unhealthy habits.
Right.
You know, you're not ready for that shit.
I don't know. I don't know if the boy, I mean, who knows what age is the right age to introduce them to, what, you know, to that. But
yeah.
I really do think that doing things like that with men mm-hmm. and women.
Yeah.
But for my kids, it was just a moment in time when I was like, oh my gosh, I'm giving this to them.
Yeah.
Right now. You know, I'm really giving them something special.
Yeah, that's
here,
a powerful you know? Gift.
Dude, this was awesome, bro. Really. I mean, we didn't get into kettlebells and I'm so happy we didn't, because we talked about so much more important, you know, like really, really just, you know, this podcast is one of my, if not my favorite thing to do in the Creatures of Habit, within the Creatures of Habit brand,
yeah.
right? It's like, I get to sit down with people and get vulnerable and talk about life
yeah.
and talk about things that potentially were not awesome to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately things that we do on a daily basis to help us stay,
yep.
you know, better.
Yep, stay dialed in
stay
and on
dialed
the path.
In.
And then kettlebells can be a tool for a rite of passage. You know, if you're new to fitness, and you want to get in shape, build your foundation, build your vessel to be able to do adventurous things, then training in any capacity is going to help you be better prepared.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I think that's what we're dealing with. That's what I'm dealing with personally, is finding ways to connect with other men, build that camaraderie that I miss from going to jiu-jitsu, fighting. You know, those are all valuable ways to connect, build your tribe, and be able to be vulnerable with other men, especially if you're in a relationship, you know, with your partner. You don't want to unload all of your shit on your partner. You want to be able to process with your boys, with your mentors, before you bring shit to the table.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's one other thing that, you know, a lot of men are just simply not doing these days, and
mm-hmm.
and that time with other men
mm-hmm.
is not something that is like, you know. And I'm not talking about like, you know, just, you know, drinking beers
exactly.
at the bar. You know,
not getting
I'm talking
shit
about,
face.
Yeah, I'm talking about sitting around and just
do something hard together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where can the audience find you?
You can find me at Primal Soldier on Instagram or at Eric Leja on Facebook. And I'm also Eric Leja on YouTube. Check me out on there. Or primalmethods.com.
Dope. And there's tons of programming
yep.
on there. I mean, I, you know, kettlebells are, I've got a super love relationship with kettlebells. I mean, it was like really my first introduction to lifting anything heavy off
really?
The ground.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, because, you know, when yeah. I was doing Muay Thai, I was just calisthenics for the most part and
mm-hmm.
conditioning, you know? And
yeah.
then there was a coach named Gavin who actually helped save my life when I was getting sober. He just became insanely passionate about kettlebells. And I think he hung with Shane Hines a lot.
Oh, wow.
And And so he became this crazy kettlebell guy. And I love kettlebells. I love kettlebells. But I got to get over to Onnit. I got to get over to Onnit and train, man.
Come check
it out. Are you there in the morning?
Yep.
Maybe I'll try to pop in tomorrow morning before
I gotta
go. I'll
be there tomorrow morning. Hit me up. I'll be there.
Dude, thank you so much for getting vulnerable with us, man.
Hey, thank you, man.
I really appreciate it. Thank you
for letting me speak my mind and what's on my heart.
I love it,
dude. I appreciate you.
You know, a lot of times you ask people how you're doing and most people just say, great, great, great. You know?
Yeah, and I've been doing a lot of that recently. So it was good to get on here and be honest.
Well, you were honest today, man. I appreciate that, dude.
Thanks, Michael.
Guys, this was the shit. You know it was the shit. It was a great episode, brought a lot of value. You got to learn a lot more about Eric than what you see on social media, which is kind of par for the course these days, right? We see people on social media and we don't really get to know them. And that's why I love being able to do this podcast in person with guests, wherever I'm at, to sit down and look somebody in the eye and ask them how it's really going. And we got that today. We got some great stories, and we also got some real value that you all can take with you for the rest of your lives. Throw that shit in your back pocket and know that, like, if you're going through something, you know, I share all the time about things that I'm going through and things that I'm things that I'm learning and things that I'm challenged with. And, you know, that's how we grow as humans. So if you're going through something, just know, hey, you're not alone. Like human nature is ebbs and flows, hills and valleys, you know, and sometimes we are high-fiving in the hills and other times we're, you know, hunkered down in the shallows and you know, that's life. That's life. Doesn't matter how good it looks online or how bad it feels, we're human beings. And man, I'm so grateful for Eric for coming here today and just chilling with us. So share this podcast with someone you think would enjoy it. Share with a friend. Share with a family member. Give us a 5-star rating and a review. That would be awesome. Don't give me a bad review. Don't give me a bad review. If you want to say something bad or not nice or unfriendly, just shoot me a DM and tell me. I don't, you know, that would be awesome. But don't write a bad review. If you don't like this or didn't resonate with you in some which way, shape, or form, I get it. I can't please everyone. Shoot me a DM. I'll get back to you, I promise.
And there you have it, folks. I hope we delivered some valuable content for you to implement into your life on a daily basis. Please remember that our habits have the power to make us or break us. Replacing bad habits with great ones is the answer to living a life of happiness, optimism, and high performance. We are capable of achieving anything. We all have what it takes to give it all we've got. Commit to one great habit each day and truly commit and watch how everything in your life starts evolving from good to great. If you enjoyed this podcast, please follow us wherever you listen to your podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. That will help us grow this podcast, bring on more amazing guests, and continue to deliver invaluable content on a weekly basis. Lastly, please share this podcast with any friends or family that you think might appreciate it. And always remember, want plus do equals have. Until the next one, fam, peace.